You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to SS Britannia. Today's date is Monday, the 4th of September, 2017. It's Labour Day. Are you listening to me, Sven Longshanks? And of course, I'm joined today by my co-host, Brutus. Brutus, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you very much.
Good-o. I thought we would start today a little bit differently to how we normally start the podcast. I normally talk about donations at the end, but we do need donations. My computer is completely falling apart. The delete button has come off completely, and I'm having problems getting the work done. And we only need another $100 to get a new computer. And we also want to get two new microphones for our hosts. We did get one for Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, and it didn't work. So we had to send that one back and get a refund, if anyone was wondering why they haven't heard his new microphone yet. But we do have overheads, and we're putting out 13 new podcasts a week at the moment, and we're hoping to put out even more than that. We've got room to put out more than that. So, you know, if anyone can afford to, please donate to the Bitcoin wallet. It's quite simple to do. You don't actually have to have a Bitcoin account. Just if you've got an eBay account, you can buy some Bitcoin on eBay from a vendor and then instruct them to deposit that Bitcoin into our Bitcoin wallet. I mean, that's the easiest way to do it. Or you can sign up with one of the Bitcoin providers and you can buy Bitcoin directly from them and then transfer it to our wallet. It's completely anonymous. And you can donate as little or as much as you like. And it does all go to our overheads. And this really brings me to another subject. I will bring this up again at the end of the podcast, but this brings me to another subject, which is PayPal. And there's been some good news on the PayPal front. As listeners are aware, lots of us have had their PayPal abilities taken away from them, so they can't receive donations. And some people can't even purchase anything online because they've had PayPal taken away. Now, this was done to the Traditional Workers' Party, the Traditionalist Workers' Party, and they appealed this, and they received a letter back from PayPal apologizing. And the reason for this was that they were registered as a political party with the Federal Election Commission. And since the party had not had been accused of any crimes, then it's illegal for PayPal to take away their means of funding, basically. Now, it doesn't look that awkward to do to get onto the Federal Election Commission. You have to have a bank account, you have to have a committee, and I think you have to file a tax return, and that's about it. So for American listeners, just register yourself as a political party. If you've got a big enough website, thinking of people like Countercurrents here, just register yourself as a political party, alt-right.com. Register yourself as a political party, and then you'll be able to use PayPal again. And I wouldn't be surprised if you could probably do something similar in Britain. And I know we've got lots of little tin pot parties in Britain, so I don't know how much it costs to register over here. It's probably free as well. And then you can use that as your reasoning. You can use that as your bargaining chip with PayPal, and they won't be able to take the ability from you to receive funds. So it's a bit of good news there, and I don't know quite how people in Britain will be able to go along with that. And obviously, not everyone's going to be able to do that. I mean, if you've got, you know, your one man and his band running a website, it might be a little bit awkward to register yourself as a political party. But if there's a few of you, then that would seem to me a workaround for this, for the people that don't want to donate by Bitcoin. I know you wanted to talk a little bit about some of these ways to get around this shuttering as well, Brutus. What are your thoughts on that? And what was it that you wanted to talk about the alt tech this week?
Yeah, that's interesting to hear. It would be be pretty funny if we saw a Daily Stormer political party in America. That would be very amusing.
And it'd be great, wouldn't it?
I mean, you could call it the Troll Party or something. But I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but they do have various internet parties. I was just reading about Kim.com building an internet party. I mean, you do have various far left communist piracy parties, which have been pushing the anti-copyright platform for a long time. So, you know, I don't know, there's a lot of odd political parties out there. Would that give them defense? Would that be the solution to having them, kicked off the internet? Would they be able to appeal that, you're not allowed to shut down our website because we're a political party? Maybe that could be the solution. I don't know. I don't know if they've looked into it.
The Monster Raving Loony Party. I mean, in Britain, we've got the Monster Raving Loony Party. They don't even make any claim to be taken seriously, and yet they're registered as a political party.
Yeah. I mean, you could even do it something very innocuous, like, the Trojan Party, the Odin Party, the Pagan Party, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, some kind of cultural thing, something funny. I mean, they've been pushing I don't know if they turned it into a political party, but they pushed the Jedi thing to turn that into a religion. So, yeah, I mean, try it, do it.
People were knocking the Traditionalist Workers Party for actually being a political party because they couldn't put in any explicitly racial stuff into the manifesto because of that. And yet they're laughing on the other side of the face now, the people that were criticizing them for doing that, because it means that they can keep their PayPal account. So, you know, they were thinking ahead, whereas other people were saying, well, we don't want to support the political system. We don't want to be a part of that. We don't think we're going to be able to win with the political system. But yeah, but if you are registered as a political party, they can't take your funding away. I think it's really good news. I really do. It's a workaround. Sorry to interrupt you there.
I think it's a real white pill, definitely. I also will say about the whole, this idea of knocking the electoral process. I mean, it just seems to me to be a great mistake. I remember when this whole idea kind of first appeared or became prominent in the alt-right when Trump bombed Syria and people were like, oh, elections. How are we going to win? How are we going to win without electing a political party? But just nobody has explained that to me. Survivalism does not work. You can go and live in the mountains and have your little white community and live like Varg Vikernes, and you'll be very happy for a couple of decades until the communists turn up on your door and murder all of you like they did with Waco. I mean, burying your head in the sand is not going to rescue us. We have to win through the electoral process. We have to elect a major political party. That has to be the end game, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I can see that, for example, what was that club called? The Monday Club, which I think Jonathan Bowden was briefly a member of, but that was not in its heyday. But the Monday Club in England, that helped to stop immigration. That was quite a successful conservative think tank, right-wing think tank that had a lot of influence on policy. Okay, so that's good. Maybe the alt-right can change the Republican Party from the inside, start to push things in a different direction. Okay, that's good. But to deny electoral politics altogether is just madness. I mean, look at the situation we've got in England. We've got 17 million people that voted for Brexit. And in about 4 years' time, or 5 years' time, these people are going to be very, very disappointed with Theresa May's flip-flop. And we're still going to have hundreds of thousands of Muslims pouring into the country. And there will be an opportunity there for a party to really take those votes. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like UKIP's going to do it. I don't know. I don't know what's happening. I don't think UKIP's even decided who their leader is going to be. But the point being, there is an opportunity there. And you may even, I don't know, America's a bigger country, it's harder, but maybe a similar opportunity exists in America. But denying electoral politics, I mean, I know it's hard, I know it's difficult, but we just, we can't ignore that it's a fight that we have to fight.
I think we've got to look at this but at like a multi-pronged approach. We've got to have political parties, we've got to have street movements, we've got to have individual activists going out at night, putting stickers up, just doing it on their own. You know, the lone wolf side of things. We've got to be attacking this every way we possibly can. We've also got to have entryism. We've got to have people that join these other political parties and work on it from the inside out. Every way that we can, we've got to fight for our race. So to discount electoral politics and say, well, we're not going to bother with that, I think that's not the way to go about it. You've got to be careful about how you do it. We've got to be clever about how we do it. But this is one of the ways of being clever about how you do it. Register with the electoral commission so that you don't lose your PayPal. And then once you are registered, if there is a place that you think you can get yourself in on the council or the city council or anything like that, then you've already got the paperwork done and you're already there with the commission. I look at it like that. It's similar to, you know, you hear people that criticize the alt-right and they will latch on to certain parts of the alt-right that compromise on some of their ideals. Maybe they've got a non-white wife, maybe they're tolerant of homosexuality or whatever, and they say, well, I don't want to be anything to do with the alt-right. I'm nothing to do with the alt-right. Well, if you're a white nationalist, if you are a nationalist, then you are a part of the alt-right, whether you like it or not. People are going to see you as a part of the alt-right. And if you want to clean the alt-right up, then you're only going to be able to do that from inside. You can't do it from the outside. You can't do it if you're an enemy to the alt-right. You have to be a part of it and work with the people in there, whether you like it or not. I mean, there are lots of bits to do with the alt-right that I don't agree with, but I'd still support the alt-right. And I'll do what I can to help clean those parts up. We've talked about this a lot, haven't we, Brutus? About, you know, just brotherly, you know, brotherly joking or teasing or just nudging and saying, come on, you know, wake up to what the real problems are. And, you know, you shouldn't be compromising on that. You know, as long as it's white people, then they're our brothers, they're our sisters, and we should have compassion for them, and we should do what we can to help them. We can't really just say, well, we're going to have nothing to do with them. You know, we just got to praise people when they do the right thing and criticize them when they do the wrong thing. So, you know, whatever we can, we have to do to save the white race, basically. You know, that's the core of it, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you'd have to be insane, I think, to want to destroy the alt-right. It's like the most successful white nationalist movement in decades. And if you want to undermine it, then you're really, I don't know, it's kind of like you're doing the work of the Jew for him. There are, as we know, a lot of Israeli Jews sitting in office blocks right now, typing away on their laptops, you know, posing as white nationalists on the internet. And what these people do is they repeat the, they talk about the same talking points, but they put a negative spin on it. They put a black pill on it, and they put a criticism on it as well, criticism of leaders and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, if you're on the internet and you're saying those kinds of things, you're not really any different to a Jew, really, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, you may be a white person, but what difference does it make if you're just an anonymous person on the internet? If you are, you may be aware of white genocide, you may be aware of the Jewish question, and you may be talking about these things on the internet. But if you're talking about these things and spreading a black pill at the same time and undermining leaders like Richard Spencer and Andrew Anglin and so on and so forth, then what are you doing for the movement? What are
not
you
helping,
doing
is it? Not
that
helping.
Is different to an Israeli Jew that's pretending to be a white nationalist?
No, it's sowing discord, isn't it? You know, you can be critical of people without sowing discord, without trying to undermine them. I think that's the difference. I used to see that a lot in the comments when I was moderating at Daily Stormer a couple of years back. People would come on there And they would just want to sow discord. They would want to insult Christians. They weren't interested in actually having a debate. They just wanted to insult people and insult others in the movement. And we had a policy of not insulting others in the movement, not actually naming people. And I've tried to keep that up here at Radio Aryan without targeting people and criticizing them. You know, I mean, you try and keep that off air, try and show a united front. And I think this Unite the Right rally really helped with that, because you felt compassion for these people that went there. You didn't know that all of them were hardcore 1488 out there for their race. A lot of people were there just because they wanted to protect the monument. Some people just wanted to go back to the 1968 immigration pattern that you had in America. But yet they were still all white, and they all turned up there, and they all turned up there to show a united front. And when we do that, then we show that we have this strength. So these little arguments that we have over different policies and different behaviors, what we've got to do is try to persuade people to change their behavior, not attack them and make enemies of them. I think that's the difference. And if somebody did want to come into the alt-right and try to dissolve it from within, then that's exactly what they would do. They would gossip, and they would try to start arguments, and they would start trying to expose people at the top, that sort of thing. You know, that's what I don't like to see. I mean, there's plenty in the alt-right that I disagree with, but I'm not going to outright attack the alt-right, because as you say, it is the most successful movement that we've had in decades, absolute decades, and people in Europe are looking to what's happening in America, and you know, saying finally something's going on over there, finally they're getting together, and Donald Trump has helped to galvanize a lot of it. It's still moving forward very, very positively. Obviously, you've got North Korea in the news at the moment, and I find that hilarious. Have you seen any of this, Brutus, about North Korea shooting off their rocket and their hydrogen bomb, and they're joking around and laughing? It's like they fired a catapult at the teacher, and the teacher's looking around and can't get to who it is that's just fired this catapult at them. It's really good to see that there is one country left in the world that is refusing to bow down to the New World Order and is not taking any shit from them. They're standing up for themselves, firing this rocket off over Japan and setting off a hydrogen bomb. They have to do that. Otherwise, how is America going to know that they're genuine, that they've got these weapons, that they will use them? Kim Jong-un has to do that. Otherwise, he hasn't got any bargaining chips. If he doesn't want his country invaded, he doesn't want his country to look like America, how decadent the West is, then he's got to do that. And I think it's great that he's done that. And all the Western leaders are absolutely furious, and Theresa May's furious, and Donald Trump's furious, and Kim Jong-un's there beaming from ear to ear, jumping up and down, and all his little Koreans are jumping up and down and smiling and cheering and clapping, and it's just really funny to see, I think. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I heard about it. To be honest with you, I'm not really paying too much attention to foreign policy at the moment. I don't know. I mean, a lot of people are upset that Trump is sending troops to Afghanistan, and I obviously am not happy about it. I obviously don't want America to go to war with North Korea. I think it would be a dumb, useless war and a mistake. But I've kind of just given up, I think, on Donald Trump's foreign policy. He obviously doesn't have control of the situation, and it seems that the military-industrial complex is just going to do whatever the hell it wants to do. And General Flynn could have got a grip on it, but you know, Trump got rid of him, and now he's alone in the White House. So I don't know. I'm not happy about it. But then on the other hand, it's just another foreign war, and we've had plenty of them before. And I'm really much more concerned with building the wall and getting the legal immigrants out. That's really what bothers me. I've kind of given up Trump, to be honest with you. Since he fired Bannon, that was really the red line for me, and I think for all of us, or for a lot of us anyway, on the alt-right. We don't know if he fired him or if he resigned, but whatever, Bannon is out. And Trump's kind of on his own. Trump, I think he just doesn't, get the culture war. This is what, I think Millennial Woes was just saying. He just put a video up. And I think I agree with him. I think he doesn't get the culture war. He's a businessman and he thinks about the money and he wants to fix the American economy. And it looks like he's actually done quite a good job of it, although nobody seems to be covering it. But, apparently the American economy is coming back. You know, the stock market's at an all-time high and et cetera, and jobs are coming back. So it seems like he's doing that. And in his mind, that is going to make America great again. And he's not really keeping his eye on the culture war. And I mean, we saw in his response to Charlottesville, where he did give an honest response and said it was violence from both sides. If you saw when he was leaving the room and a journalist asked him about racial tension in America, his answer was, well, we just got to get jobs for people. When people get back to work, they'll stop fighting with each other. And I think he honestly and earnestly meant that. So, yeah, I think he's a businessman. He's going to fix the economy. And I think the Jews understand that. And they're probably, I mean, if I was a Jew and I wanted to deal with Donald Trump, I'd probably be like, yeah, all right, mate. Yeah, we'll fix the economy. And that's all right. But, you know, there's this war that we have to, you know, it's not going to be too expensive and, you know, bargain with him on that level. So I think that's probably what's happening. So I kind of give up on Donald Trump, to be perfectly honest with you. He's going to fix the American economy. He's, you know, better than Hillary Clinton, I suppose. But, yeah, obviously I wouldn't want to see a war with North Korea, but I don't know. I've given up on it.
I think he might be right there about him not understanding the culture wars and the ways that we're being demoralized and degraded. He seems to understand the immigration problem, but again, I think he's looking at that as more of a jobs problem more than anything else, not the effect that it has on having blacks and whites living next to one another and the crime rate. I think he's more interested in the jobs that have been taken away from Americans by having all this cheap labor there. And I think you're correct there that he's looking at things in terms of economic terms rather than anything else. And he may be doing what the military industrial complex says in exchange for them not getting in the way of the plans that he has on the home front. As far as North Korea goes, I really do want to see him sat down with Kim Jong-un. And, you know, I want to find out more about this Kim Jong-un character. And that's what they're going to have to do. They're either going to have to go to war and wipe out North Korea, or they're going to have to sit down and come to some kind of agreement. And, you know, I really do want to see that happen. We've seen Libya get destroyed. We've seen Iraq get destroyed. We've seen Syria get destroyed. And Kim Jong-un would be a complete idiot if he didn't pay any attention to that. And he has paid attention to that. And he's now built himself a nuclear weapon. He's got a nuclear deterrent. And that's why he's got to send rockets over Japan and set off nuclear bombs in the caves under North Korea, because he's got to prove that he's got that deterrent before Trump will sit down and do anything with him. And I think the news itself are using it as a distraction from what's really going on over there in America with the racial tensions and with the Antifa. And nobody's mentioning this huge petition to have Antifa declared as a terrorist group, which has got to be done. I mean, if you look at what they were doing in Germany at the G20, all the attacks and the damage and the crime that went on, and what they've done over there, they've taken down the main Antifa website and they've banned that completely, but they've still done nothing about it in America. I mean, they just released figures for the amount of school teachers that are involved in Antifa. It's all school teachers. These people that are teaching our children are the very ones that are going out there with acid and spraying it in white people's faces and with bicycle locks and smashing people over the head with it. These really violent, vicious reptiles that we've seen attacking people over there, a lot of them are school teachers. It's just, you know, the people that are teaching our children are the ones that are going out there and instigating all this violence and then blaming white people for it. That's the important news. That's what people really want to be hearing about, not what's going on in Southeast Asia. But I guess, you know, they want to portray this idea that we're all one human race and globalism and internationalism, so they'll tell us what's going on over there. I mean, they've been complaining that the BBC hasn't been showing equal footage of floods in Bangladesh as they have been of floods in Houston. Well, America was founded by white people. It's founded by English people, and they speak English. So, of course, we're going to be more interested in what's going on in the floods in Houston than we are in Bangladesh. Absolutely ridiculous, this equality drive for everything. I mean, I want to know whether white people are all right. I couldn't care less what's happening in Bangladesh or what's happening in India. It doesn't affect us. What does affect us is anti-white policies and anti-white violence, which is what we've been seeing recently. I don't know if you want to move on to another subject here, or whether you've got anything else that you'd like to add to that, Brutus?
Yeah, well, I guess there's a lot of Bangladeshis in England, so they get upset.
Yeah.
they want to see their country on the news, unfortunately. But I really don't like Bangladeshis, I have to say. But what was I going to say? Yeah, about the Antifa. Yeah, I mean, we talked about this last week. I mean, this is, I have to say it again, I am quite, you know, quite nervous, actually. I haven't been this nervous since, well, about this time last year on the build-up to the Trump election. I mean, it does seem to me like we are slipping into a communist revolution. We have censorship on the internet. The Daily Storm has been taken down. Stormfront's been taken down. And that set a certain precedent whereby, you know, other websites can also be taken down. And perhaps different hosters can be sued if they don't take other websites down. It's a very dangerous position of online censorship that we're in. And at the same time, you have this massive horde of Antifa on the streets attacking people and smashing buildings up. I mean, these people have been, the news stations have been building these people up for like 2 years now, since Trump announced his election campaign. And it's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and nobody's clamping it down. So I think we do, I mean, I don't want to be black-pilled, but at the same time, we have to recognize the danger. When we're facing it, we're faced with internet censorship and a massive horde of Antifa on the streets attacking people and being violent. And if these two problems aren't solved, then we're going to have a really big problem. And I think of the two, the internet censorship is the bigger problem, because if you have internet censorship, then we won't even know what Antifa are doing on the streets, because you won't even know. It'd be a silent war. We'll just be getting murdered and attacked, and nobody will report on it. So, yeah, we are in a dangerous situation, and I want to just, like I say, I don't want to spread a black pill, but there is a certain tendency within the alt-right. People are talking about civil war. I mean, I've seen this ever since, you know, I started following it. I mean, people are saying, oh, race war now, blah, blah, blah. I mean, let me just clarify. We are not going to win a civil war. We're not going to win. We're not going to fight against the army. It's not going to happen. You're living in a la-la land, a dreamland. I mean, look at history. The English Civil War was funded by the Jews. The American Revolution was funded by the Jews. The French Revolution was funded by the Jews. The Communist Revolution was funded by the Jews. All of these revolutions were funded by outside sources. And off the top of my head, the only right-wing revolution that I can think of would be Franco in Spain. He smashed the communists, but he was supported by Hitler in Germany. They were giving him money and supplies and so on and so forth. So you cannot win a civil war without outside finance. And without another country giving you support, there's no, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, I'd love to hear it, but as far as I understand it, there's no historical precedent for that. So if you're an American or an Englishman or whatever, you're dreaming of race war now, there's going to be a civil war and the system's going to collapse and then we'll win. You're living in a la-la land. You're imagining things. I mean, show me the historical precedent. Show me where this happens. So, yes. I don't want to be black-pilled, but we should not be praying for the collapse. We should not be praying for the civil war. I've seen so many people on the internet talk about this, saying they're waiting for it. I would also like to point out there is an economic plan called the Cloward and Pivot Plan. I think I got that right. You can look it up. And it's one Jew and one Goy, I think. Or it might be two Jews. I'm not sure. But they're economists. And they made this plan up in the 60s. And their plan was basically run up a huge national debt based on the welfare state. So just expand the welfare state, get the government to spend loads and loads of money on, you know, black people, I suppose, the unemployed underclass, and then build up this massive debt, and then collapse it. And the idea was that when you collapse the debt, then you install a communist revolution. The idea would be that, you know, when the debt bubble bursts, then you say, oh look, capitalism has failed. Now we need to try communism. So this, I mean, people are looking at the debt crisis and the problems in the economic system, and people can see that this is building up towards some kind of breakdown. But this is being engineered. This is not, you know, this is not happening by accident. This is being engineered. That is the plan. Build up to a breakdown and then come in with the heavy hammer. What's that saying for the Fabian Society? When I strike, I shoot hard.
I don't know. There were wolves in sheep's clothing. That's the symbol. That's another used, one.
But there's also a turtle, and he says, I'm slow, but when I strike hard. Something like that. So, point being that we do not want a civil war, and we do not want to be praying for an economic breakdown. It's not going to end well for us. There will be millions of black savages running around the place, killing us in our sleep.
I think we should draw a distinction, really. I mean, if that was to happen at the moment and there was to be a civil war against the alt-right or against nationalists, the problem would be you would have all the non-whites and you would have all the whites alongside them, the liberals and the perverts and a lot of the conservatives as well who don't want to be called racists. So, yeah, you would have the state helping them. So, yeah, that would be a complete failure. But I can see a time coming when there will be race war on the streets just because there will be that many of them outnumbering us. Once we get to, say, 40, 50% non-white, then they're going to attack the whites. That's what's happened before in the past. When the numbers get large enough, and they won't care whether the person they're attacking supported the Labour Party or supported immigration, they will just see somebody white and they will attack them. With the same as they see the Antifa see somebody white in America and they attack them. They will attack them for being a Trump supporter. They'll attack them for being just slightly right of centre. They will attack them. And that's the mindset that these blacks have. They're just looking at whites as whites are racist, whites are the enemy, we need to take everything from whites and kill them all. And once they get to a certain ratio of black to white, then that will happen and your uniform will be your skin. And that will come, I think, within the next 20 years, looking at demographics. And I think maybe some people are looking forward to that, but that won't happen at the moment. That won't happen at the moment because we've got too many white people are supporting the Antifas and the blacks and the open borders and the pro-perversity movement. There's far too many of them that are supporting them. And you'd have the army on their side as well. I think that, do you know what I mean? We've got to draw a distinction between the two scenarios, I think. Because, as you say, if something like that was to happen now, then no, that wouldn't be a good thing. But it will eventually happen. If you look at the way things have gone, started off with non-whites in the country, weren't able to understand their language. They looked a bit odd. Then we came up with this new crime of mugging. Then there were more burglaries, and there were more rapes, and there were rape gangs, and there was terrorism. That is the only way it can end, is in a black and white war on the streets, butchering the whites, basically. Because that is the trajectory. Nature cannot have two groups in one territory. One group has to exterminate the other group, basically, and take over the territory. I mean, we always understood this. I mean, if you look in the British history books, I mean, you're not talking about other races, but just when we went abroad to France, we were talking, well, we've got to exterminate all the French and replace them all with British. And that's in the history of the kings of Britain. They talk like that. People criticize the Old Testament and say, oh, look at the Old Testament. They want to exterminate this other race. But that was the way everybody used to think. You know, just 1500 years ago, if you're going to take over territory, you've got to exterminate the other group that's already there and replace them with your group. And, you know, this is civilized whites thinking like that. You know that that's the instinct of the Negroes, is to wipe out all the whites and take the place over. You know, look at Haiti. Look at what happened in Haiti. Look at what happened, I'm trying to think of the name of the place, in Tanzania. The same thing happened in Tanzania. It might have been with blacks and Arabs. But as soon as there is a certain percentage of the other group, that's what happens. And that's because of nature, because you can't have two together in one area. One group has to be wiped out, either wiped out through miscegenation or wiped out through extermination. One of the two, and that's what we're headed towards. There is some positive things in this. I mean, I'm saying that this is the negative trajectory. The positive trajectory has come out this week in a poll, and it's actually a poll that's been carried out by Hope Not Hate, and they have polled, how many people have they polled? 4,000 people in England, asking 140 questions relating to current events. And half of all the Britons that they questioned think Islam is a threat. And a quarter of all the people questioned think Islam is a dangerous religion that incites violence. And obviously they then say it paints a worrying set of views and it's going to require a significant effort to address, basically significant brainwashing. But even with all this brainwashing, we've still got half of all the people in Britain think that Islam is a threat. That's even with all this Islam is a religion of peace nonsense that's on the television and in the newspapers. So we've got half of Britain are aware of the threat that we're facing. 17 million people voted for nationalism, voted for Brexit. So even though things are heading in a wicked direction, you know, we can still turn this around. We've still got the numbers there. We just need to reach this 50% of Britons that think Islam is a threat, and we need to educate them more on why it's a threat and how long it's been a threat for, and how you cannot stop it from being a threat. The only way that you can deal with it is to remove it completely. The same as if you're cutting out a cancer, you have to remove the whole cancer, cut it out the body, and it's incinerate it. And we have to remove Islam completely from Europe and send it back to where it came from in order to stop it from being a threat to us. And I don't think it would take much to convince these half of Britons that that's what needs to be done. I mean, that's a good figure, isn't it, really? 50% of Britons think Islam is a threat.
I we're definitely winning the war of ideas. It's just, well, it's a race against time, isn't it? I mean, the left are winning the demographic war, and we are slowly winning the war of ideas. It depends who gets to the finishing line first, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, just to clarify what I was saying there, I do 100%, you know, agree. The direction that we are heading in is towards Haiti. It is towards, you know, the situation in South Africa. It is towards blood on the streets, violence in the streets, you could call it a civil war if you like. I would just call it an extermination. I mean, the point I was trying to make is that it's not a war that we're going to win. That's the point. I mean, it's going to be violent and nasty. I don't believe we're going to win it because it won't be a fair fight. It will be the government and the minorities against us. And, you know, the government's got tanks, it's got bombs, it's armed. And, you know, especially here in England, we don't even have the right to bear arms. It's not a fight we're going to win. And it does seem to me some nationalists are dreaming of this. When will the race war happen? Because then we'll win. You know, we'll get down to business. No, that's not a good idea. I don't think we're going to win the fight. And I don't think there's, like I say, a historical precedent. I mean, the only one I can think of is Franco. He beat the communists, but he was, like I say, he was sponsored by Hitler. So unless we get, I don't know, the Chinese to help us, or Russia or something, which I suppose is not impossible, it's going to be a bloody end for America and for white people in America. And once America goes down, obviously Europe and Australia follows. So we are gradually winning the war of ideas. That is a positive. The memes are working. The alt-right is working. People are waking up. I mean, they can't help it. But like you say, it's a race against time. Who's going to win? Is demographics going to win? Or is the white race going to wake up before it's too late?
Well, I think when we get to that point, it will either be that the whites that are in the armed forces and that are in the government finally realise that they've been along the wrong path and they've got to fight back, or we will get divine intervention. I firmly believe one of the two. I don't think the white race will ever go extinct. I think the world was created for the white race. I think we're at the top. We are the sons of God or the sons of the gods or whatever you want to call it. I think the world was created for us. So I think we're guaranteed that we are going to win. And the scriptures in the Bible tell me that as well, that we are going to win and that these other races are going to be repelled. So either that will come from people waking up to our ideas, or it will come when it comes to bloodshed in the streets and the people that are in the armed forces, the whites that are in the armed forces, suddenly realize that this is all about race, or there will be a divine intervention, one of the three. And the one which will avoid the bloodshed is the winning of the ideas, which is what we're trying to do here, and avoid this bloodshed that we know is coming in the next couple of decades. And if we can avoid it, any way to avoid it is going to be better than, you know, mountains of dead bodies. And the way to avoid that is to advocate for these people to be sent back and given incentives to send them back. You know, I mean, money is, you could give them £10,000 to go back to somewhere in Africa and they'd be absolute millionaires for the rest of their lives. And that would be cheaper. That's less money than would get spent on them in a year in Europe. And yet, how many of them do you think would take that? They would bite your hand off for £10,000 to take back to Africa. And same with the Syrians. Offer them this money to go back. So it's not like we're advocating violence, as the left says, because you're a nationalist, because you're a racist, you're advocating violence against these other races. Well, no, we're not advocating violence against them. We're trying to avoid violence against them. We think they should be given incentives to go back. And alongside the incentives, you could say, well, you're not going to get any medical treatment, and you're not going to get any housing, and you're not going to get any free schooling, and you're not going to get any other benefits that our ancestors put in place for us. That's all being stopped. And I think they would self-deport. I mean, that's what we see happening. We're already being told now that people are leaving Britain because they're so frightened of what's going to happen with Brexit. They're self-deporting, which is a fake self-deporting. But I bet if they were offered money to go back to Africa with 10 grand in your back pocket, they would jump at the chance. And especially if they wouldn't have any benefits while they were here. And that's what we need to advocate for, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you only have to shoot a few of them and the rest run away. It's pretty obvious, isn't it, really? I mean, I say this all the time when I talk to normies about you know, these people coming over and hiding in the trucks and, you know, and so forth. You know, just say, well, you only have to shoot one or two of them. And then the rest will get the message and they'll stop coming. Yes, it's...
You should be within your rights to do that. Trespassers will be shot. And they are trespassing coming into our country. You know, you have a legal right to do that, Brutus. You know, you're laughing about it, but we have a legal right to do that, to defend our borders, the same as you have a legal right to defend your home. I don't know why people aren't... Well, I mean, I speak to people and they don't know either. They say, well, I just don't know why the government is doing this and allowing these hordes to just come into the country. Why aren't they shooting them? And yet when we get German politicians that suggest this, they get silenced and demonized in the media. But I bet that 50% that voted and said that they think Islam is a threat, I bet that 50% would support that. Shoot in a few of them. Shoot them if they're trying to break in. And, you know, people say, or the BBC likes to say, that even though we're leaving the EU, it won't make any change to immigration. Well, it means that we're not signed up to these treaties with the EU to have open borders. It means we can defend our borders. We can do it. We can defend our borders legally. We could shoot them. We should shoot them. That, you know, that would set an example. And we're quite within our legal rights to do that. There are other ways as well. I mean, Australia puts them all on an island, and that has stopped any of them trying to get into Australia now. Because they just say, well, no, well, you can't come into Australia, but we'll just put you on this island instead in these bamboo cages until you decide you want to go home again. And, you know, I've suggested this before, that they could pay Greece to buy some of their islands off them or hire their islands off them and just keep them all caged up on these islands until they decide that their country is safe enough to go back home again, which I think would be pretty quick if they knew they weren't going to get into Europe. All these different ways that we could stop this from happening, which shows that it's being deliberately done to us. It's deliberately being done to us, as you pointed out earlier, that this economic plan. It's all being deliberately done to us. What the question is whether or not all the Gentiles involved are aware that this is being deliberately done to us or not. I think there are probably still a few left that actually believe all the nonsense that they're told. That this is a liberal way, this is our way of caring for these other races. They don't realise that it's actually been a Jewish plot right from the beginning to wipe out the white race. And we've been in this war for thousands of years. They don't know that. They think they're doing good by doing this harm to us. So it's so important we get our ideas out there and we're heard by them so that we can change their views on this. You know, I keep mentioning Katie Hopkins. She gets better and better all the time. She gets more red-pilled. I think she's wonderful. We need more people like her and the people that she speaks to in those circles. She's obviously going to convince of the truth of what's really going on. And you think, you know, I mean, four or five years back, we didn't have anybody that was saying anything remotely like what we're saying in the mainstream. And now we have got people saying that in the mainstream. I think she's great. I really do.
Yeah. I think most people just think that the government is incompetent, really, and that seems to be the deeply ingrained opinion that just about everybody has. And I think what builds up in normal people is just a general frustration with the incompetence of government, that they just give up on it. Basically, they're just like, oh God, this just doesn't make any sense. So they just ignore it because it doesn't make any sense. I mean, I've experienced this myself. When I was, you know, in the old days of conspiracy theory and the truth movement, you get curious about it, you get a bit inspired about it, you know that there's a great injustice there, but after some time, all the pieces, they don't fit together and you can't really make sense of it. And so you're just like, well, you know, it's just a waste of time. Why am I wasting my time thinking about this? It doesn't make sense. So that is probably one of the reasons why so many people switch off. I mean, I think you'd find a lot of people would be. I mean, we do talk about sheeple, don't we? And it does seem to be apparent that only a small number of the population is interested in politics. I think most people would be interested in politics if the political situation was made clear to them. You know, they might not spend all day thinking about it, but they would have much more of a strong, passionate, political opinion if they understood the enemy, if they understood the Jewish question. And obviously, this is why you have to explain the Jewish question to people, because unless you understand the Jews, you can't explain why a government would want to destroy its people. It just doesn't make sense at all. I mean, most people, they look at politicians and they think, well, you know, they're corrupt, and they can accept it. They can tolerate corruption. They can tolerate a bit of luxury for the politicians and so on and so forth, because people know that human nature is just like that. And, but they don't think that the politicians actually hate them, you see. And you can't understand it without understanding the Jewish question. And if you don't understand that Jewish question, then, you know, like I say, it doesn't make sense. So your mind just gets fuddled, and it puts like a check on your passions, so to speak. I mean, this is why, I can see this personally for myself, this is why I've become politically active. I mean, I've been complaining about the government for years. I mean, ever since I've been an adult, I've been complaining about the government, but I never actually did anything because I couldn't see the enemy. I couldn't see the enemy. And it's until you pull back the curtain and you see the enemy and you tap into that kind of primordial us and them kind of instinct, you know, my tribe against your tribe kind of instinct. Until you tap into that, you can't really get angry and you can't really stand up and fight. Your mind's just in this muddled state, and you can't really engage your passions with the political process. So yeah, this is why we, above all else, we have to talk about the Jewish question, and without understanding that, then the world just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think we would have far more people interested in politics if you had an ethno-state, if you had a national socialist state where everyone was working for the good of the nation, then everybody would be interested in politics because it would be directly affecting them. They would be wanting to have a say. They would be wanting to do what's best for the nation, best for the country. And you would bring children up when they were raised at school. Instead of being taught by these Antifa teachers, they would be taught about our past and how they were an essential link in the chain going towards our future, and how they could have a say in the state, and how the state was basically the receptacle that contains the nation, like the nation's a liquid and the state is a glass that the liquid is held within. It's a structure that's there to keep everyone together for the benefit of the people. And you would explain this to them and how they could take part in it and how they were essential. They were an essential part of it, whether they were farmers, whether they were metal workers, engineers, doctors, all working for the good of the nation. I mean, this is one of the really good things about North Korea. This bomb that they just set off, you know, they're boasting about the fact that this is a homemade nuclear missile. They made that all by themselves. They manufactured every component of it themselves. They came up with they worked out the designs for it themselves, and they built it themselves. They did all that for themselves, which is great. I mean, this is what every country should be building and doing everything for themselves, because then you would do them to the very best of your ability. The products that your country would be producing would be the absolute very best that your people could make. We would have fantastic technology if we were to actually do that. But we don't. We outsource everything to the cheapest country that can make it. Instead of thinking, well, what's the very best we can do? We think, well, what's the very cheapest we can produce this in? And we're going to want it to fall apart within 5 years, so people have to buy another one. You know, it's a completely different way of looking at things. Once you understand how important race is and you understand what the ethnic nation is, the whole way of looking at things changes. Do you know what I mean? Everything, absolutely everything, is like turned on its head. And instead of trying to make as much money, you think, well, the nation will be trying to do what's best for the nation. Do I really want all this choice? No, I don't want all this choice. I want the very best of everything. And if your nation is your family, you want the very best for your family as well. So we wouldn't have so many products, but every product that we did have would be the very best that you could get. And when we were making things for ourselves, when we didn't have all these products in the shops, we couldn't go out there and have all this choice, the clothing that we had was made to the very best of our ability, and it was personalized, and it would last for your whole lifetime. You know, you'd have bespoke clothing, you'd make your own bowl, your own spoon. If you look back at the Anglo-Saxon brooches and the things that they used to make, they're fantastically intricate that people, you know, we'd have a problem doing some of these things today that our ancestors used to make. And this was just for everyday things that they used as part of their clothing. And yet today you'd be paying a fortune for them, and they would be the very, very best brooches or clasps or belts that you could buy. And yet back then it was just this, well, I made it because I needed it and for myself. And for my family, they needed clothing, so I made it for them. And it was made to the best of our ability. And you can extend that to the nation. And when you think about all the intellectual power and manpower that the nation has, everything that we have should be the very, very best that is available. Not the cheapest, not what can be produced the cheapest. We should have the very best. We've been given this illusion of that choice is what matters. Look, you can buy 1,000 different types of shoes if you want. Well, no, I just want decent shoes that are going to last, that are going to keep the water out, and that are comfortable. Don't have to have all this choice. You just want the best. And we've been deceived so that we no longer want the best. We think having a choice is what matters. And again, that dovetails into democracy. Instead of having the best party, one party made up of your own people, we are told, oh no, you want to have all these different parties fighting amongst one another, and then you've got a choice and you can choose which one you want to vote for. Well, no, I want the very best party, the very best of my people to be leading it, and I want the very best of my people to be his advisors, and I want him to be doing the very best for us. Not loads of different parties fighting among one another about who's going to lower the taxes or who's going to put up the taxes. It's pointless, but it all ties in together with this way of looking at things through racial eyes instead of looking at things through the individualist, materialist, consumer eyes. And you end up thinking of things in an immortal way as well, don't you? Like you think of your race and how long your nation has been here for, rather than just this one lifetime. And you see yourself as a part of that, a part of this, as I say, like a link in a chain, rather than being this individual that's separate to everything else. You realize that you have a purpose in life, and your purpose is serving your race.
Yeah, I came across an interesting account on Twitter the other day, which is dedicated to bringing back architecture, classical architecture. And there were some beautiful buildings there. And the guy was making the point that when people used to build buildings in the past, they had a concept that, you know, their descendants would be able to enjoy the things that they built. And so they would work really hard, and they would create something, you know, that was difficult to create and perhaps expensive, but would be beautiful and magnificent. And they had a vision in their mind that, you know, this was going to stand there for hundreds of years, if not thousands of years. And it's going to, you know, help our descendants for that time. And there was a spirit of permanency there. And that's just not today. That doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately, as you say. We now live in a consumerist, throwaway culture where nothing is important anymore, nothing is permanent anymore. It's a trash culture. I mean, it's actually almost a very lefty kind of thing that you're saying, Sven. It's one of the things that the hippies they like to complain about. You know, they attack capitalism as a throwaway culture with all this plastic and the packaging and the flipping recycling. And I absolutely 100% agree. I mean, it's, why do you have to have all this packaging? Why are we filling up huge chunks of the earth with just garbage and junk? It really doesn't make any sense at all. And obviously the whole, you know, capitalist versus socialist, dynamic is just, well, it's that old trick, isn't it? Create a problem, offer the solution to the problem, isn't it? I mean, the Jews, they created this industrial revolution and this capitalist society built on the stock market, built on creating trinkets, built on alienating people to work in factories instead of you know, being able to craft things for yourself. They built this society. It made people very unhappy. And then they offer up the solution. Well, what's the solution? Communism. Great. So yeah, it's just a trick. At the end of the day, I think feudalism is the real solution.
Now, real nationalism is real socialism. That's why it was called National Socialism. And when you think about it with the individual, what we're taught today is where the individual should grab everything that he possibly can for himself. Well, that means you can get all you've got is what one individual can get. If you've got the whole nation that's doing everything that it's doing for the nation, for everyone else, then you've got the very best that your whole nation can provide. Not just the best that one individual can grab for himself, but the best that the whole nation can provide. And it's being done for you, and you are a part of that. That's the way of looking at things through the racial eyes and spiritual eyes, religious eyes. It's such a shame that religion has become divorced from its racial component, which is so important to it. How can you have a religion that's been followed by people that the religion wasn't given to in the first place? But that's what we've got most of the time. And our religions have been taken from us. Jews at the top of Christianity, Hinduism's been taken from us, Buddhism's been taken from us, our paganism is no more. All of it's been taken and divorced from its racial component, and then it ceases to have its meaning after that. Now, I see all of it is linked together. Everything is so connected together. This lie that we're told that everything is separate and everybody is separate from everyone else. We're not. You know, we're part of an ethnic nation, and serving your nation is what life is all about. That's where you'll find fulfillment, whether it's serving your nation by producing more and having children, or whether it's serving your nation in material ways like we're doing here, or whether it's serving your nation by donating to Radio Aryan. Just bringing us back to what we started off talking about at the beginning of the podcast. You can help us out by donating, and we do need some donations. We do need some new equipment. So please remember that we do have a Bitcoin wallet available. Morgoth has been kicked off PayPal, but I do believe you can still donate to him to a Bitcoin wallet as well. So don't forget that either. Brutus, just before we finish, I think you wanted to add something as well. There was a site you wanted to tell people about as well.
Yeah, there's a website. It's called WrongThink. It's an alt tech website. It is an alternative to Facebook. It's basically a Facebook clone. It works just like Facebook. It's functional. The guy that built the website, he's got a Twitter account, and he was tweeting out articles from the Daily Stormer. So he looks like a pretty hardcore red-pilled guy. And there's a nice little community on there. And as you know, I do believe in the consumer revolt. I do believe that we need to destroy these big Silicon Valley companies, these Jewish-owned companies. And please go and check it out. I'm on there. My name's Brutus on there, so you can say hello to me. And that's it.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming on, Brutus. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Monday with more SS Britannia for you. So until then, we hope you all have a great week ahead of you.
Aryan, for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.